Welcome to Wolf's Watch. I'm Wolf. As always, keeping an eye out for tips, tricks, things that are going to help you scale up your business, seize the opportunities that this chaotic marketplace presents for you and your business. Today, we just got a quick talk about something that I have. This is a conversation I have had with business owner after business owner after business owner, executive after executive after executive. It is frustrating, and I want to share this with you so that you can avoid the potholes other people are driving their cars into, so to speak. I want to share with you four ways that you can guarantee your training for your employees will never work, will never get to the results that you want to get. I'm going to have some fun with this. This is going to be snarky, and this is going to go right to it. There are four things that are common practices that just absolutely assure you won't get the result that you need for your training. And you're going to get something to write with. You're going to know better. So don't make these mistakes. Don't do these things, no matter what anybody tells you, because it is just going to completely derail your effort. You will be wasting your money. You'd be better off just not doing the training. So here's the first one. First way to guarantee that your employee, say you have an employee you want to develop, right? Someone you want to pull up through the ranks. This is hugely important right now. With the quiet quitting issue, with the war for talent that's going on, and for the need to be able to be flexible and adaptable to seize opportunities to serve your customers better, to serve your clients better, right? To beat your competition, to grow your business. Well, here's one thing that go ahead and do this to make sure that it's all wasted effort. Send your employees to a big university to get an extension program or a certificate program, because by gosh, they got the top knowledge. That'll never work. It will always fail. Here's why. And it's not that the universities don't know what they're doing. They are really good at what they do. Educating. They do not train. They educate. They're two different things. Training is about skills transfer. You learn a new skill, you hone it, you learn how to apply it, and you go back to work and put it in practice. Universities don't do that. They're not designed to do that. That's not their intention to do that. And you're using the wrong tool to get the result that you're looking for. So if you want to waste your money when you need training for new skills for your employees, right? I'm not saying education is a waste of money. That's a whole nother conversation. The correct education, we're not even going to go. I'm not even going there. Say what you want. Misquote what I'm saying here as much as you want. This is the fact. If you are attempting to develop your employees to be more productive in the workplace, if you send them for education, you're wasting your money. They need training so that they can hone skills and apply them immediately in the workplace. That's not what education is about. Education is about acquiring knowledge and information. So go ahead, send them to that big university, send them to a UCLA extension. I love UCLA extension. I live in Southern California. I have been there a bunch of times, great programs. It's not training. Go to that Stanford certificate program or one of the best, Harvard. Send them to Harvard so you can waste even more money, because it's even more expensive if it's training that you need. Instead, if you really want to train them and get a result, send them to training, not education. So that's the first mistake. Here's the second thing. After you have sent them to training, not education, but you've sent them to a training program, wait for even better, 2 months, and then ask them why they're not applying what they've learned in the class. And I'll just say it like that, because guess what? 2 months later, they won't be. If that's when you're following up with them, they will have forgotten 90% of what they learned, and they won't be applying it on their job. Why would they? Didn't expect them to do anything different. See, here, there needs to be follow-up coaching. There's two things related to this, right? To this error. Two things need to happen. There needs to be follow-up coaching on the job, immediately after the training, like within 72 hours. And then there needs to be either every other week or at the minimum once a month follow-up for the next 90 days, and another follow-up 3 months after that, and because it take and another follow-up after that. Here's why. Because it takes 3 months to 12 months for them to completely integrate what they've learned on the job site. Doesn't mean it takes them that long to do it, to learn it, but it takes them that long to integrate it, to master it, to continue to hone and improve it. So do not, and this is usually a budgeting error, do not cut your budget going, oh, you know what? We got the training for cheap. If you're saying you got the training for cheap, stop wasting your money. Don't do it. You're just going to throw good money after bad. That's not really true. When the employees leave your company, because they will quit eventually in an environment like that, right? It feeds into some other problems. Like you'll have more quiet quitting. You'll have more top talent leaving because they'll go apply those skills somewhere else. Someplace that coaches and mentors them in applying it and mastering it. So they get way better at what they're doing. Not just a little bit, but we're talking massively better. And then the companies that they go to, if they're a competitor, you're in trouble. So here's the thing, you got to make sure. So one, you got to make sure there is an implementation coaching plan in place. If you cut that out of your budget, you're wasting your money. I had a client that, someone that I knew socially that wanted to help with a issue they were having with their company, train their executive team on some issues, and said, look, here's how we need to structure this. I'm like, no, this is what we're going to do. This is all the budget we got. Well, you know, we can't work with that. And it's like, well, we don't want to do the follow-ups. I'm going, well, I made the mistake, and this was on me. This is on me. I made the mistake of going ahead and saying, all right, we'll do this. We'll do, and we did a one-day training for them. And one of the two errors, and I'll tie this into something else that's coming up. One of the two errors in that was I allowed the client to not do the follow-up training. That was built into the contract as an option as opposed to a requirement. And I told them up front, I go, if you don't do this, this will fail. And they're like, we don't need that. This is what we want to do. So that was on me. That was my error. Should not have taken the contract, shouldn't have done a job for them because it wasn't going to work out. And it ended up not working out. And there were tears and recriminations and it just didn't work well for any of us. So that was an error on my part. From the same time, the CEO of that company made a massive error in being focused on, oh, no, we're going to do this one thing and it's going to change everything, right? No, unless it's an NLP-based therapy session of some type, you're not going to get that kind of that kind of change, which is not what we were doing. It was a skills-related thing. Second thing related to having coaching or not having the coaching or waiting to apply is not holding your managers accountable for coaching, right? You need to have a plan. You need to talk to whoever that trainee, you send someone for training, I'm going to call them a trainee, whoever that trainee reports to, whether it's you as the founder of your company, CEO of your company, or one of your managers, you or the manager, either you need to be prepared with an outline of, okay, here's how you're going to coach them. Here's the expectations. Here's what you're going to do. You got a plan on how you're going to coach this person to apply it. Because when they come back and start to apply it, they're going to have questions. They're going to they're going to stub their toe. They're going to make errors. They're going to not be clear on things. You need to coach them through that. You don't have to know what they've been coached on. You need to have the skill to coach them through resolving whatever issues come up, right? And then to continue to get better, learn things, apply the learning, and continue to get better at it as they're applying so they get a higher level of mastery. And eventually you want them, this is a bonus, eventually you want them to teach others, right? Train others. But that's another topic for another time. So you need to be, if someone reports directly to you, you have to have that. If not, you need to coach and prepare your managers for playing that role so that they know how to coach, so that they know how to integrate the new expectations into that employee's performance expectations. When you're doing performance reviews, we've got sessions that we've done on performance reviews and the problems with that. So we'll leave that to those sessions, go back, and we'll have more content on that in the future. But the thing is, there needs to be a plan in place, and you have to coach your managers so that they're prepared to coach the person who's been trained on applying the training so that they know how to adjust the expectations that are set for that person in terms of their performance. Right? If it's sales training, what's the sales improvement that's expected, right? If it's learning how to be how to do some new type of coding or work with a new software language, or to be better at running reports from a new accounting software that's been brought in. What is going to be different in what that person does in their job, and how is that going to be reflected in how their performance is reviewed? So that you can, because performance, at the end of the day, the performance reviews are really a powerful tool for you and your managers to develop the people. And I know there's other reasons that it gets done. The primary value in working with the employee is using that as a way of coaching them to become better employees so they can perform better, so that they can advance their career better, so that your company grows faster and more profitably, right? So that's two parts. You know, don't wait for 2 months after they've been trained to find out whether or not they're applying it and what's going on, because you can just assume that they're not doing it, because in 99.99999% of the times, in 99.99999% of the people, they're not going to be applying much at all. They're not going to be doing anything at all. So you can just ask them why they're not doing it. But don't. Instead, set the expectation for yourself and your managers on how you're going to coach them, and have a coaching plan, a follow-up plan with whoever's providing the training to help the person who's been trained or the group that's been trained through implementation. Okay, that's number two. So here's the third thing to do if you want to completely torpedo your training and make sure that it's never effective. Ready? Send people to skills training in order to fix organizational fit issues. It is not going to do a darn thing but burn your budget. And it happened. I've watched organizations do that where they'll go, you know what? You just don't see the real problem is people aren't getting along. So let's go send them to training on how to better use the software system they're supposed to be using, so they stop arguing so much. That doesn't fit it. Or you've got someone that has the wrong mindset or is in the wrong position, and they're not fitting correctly in terms of their skills, their mindset, in what the seat that you've got them in, right? There's the saying of got to have the right people in the right seats on the bus. You also got to know how to define your seats correctly, so you've got the right seats on the bus to begin with. We talked about that recently. Now, let's come back to the point here. You're using the wrong training, right? If it's an EQ issue, right, emotional quotient, then they need to go to EQ training, not to an analytical training, not to some other form of job skills, you know, be better at running a program, a software program, or being better at using a piece of equipment in the factory. That's not going to help. Here's an example. A company that I work for, and won't say the name so they can tell the story with some detail. There was a large company building big product, and the senior management had someone that they wanted to promote to the VP of manufacturing. This person was going to have 6,500 people report to them. They sent this person to training in order to prepare them for the position, see if they were going to work in that position, because this person was someone that was he was a retired Marine. They'd been very successful in the Marine Corps. He built a team that would just literally crawl across broken glass for him. He was a challenge to work for. So there were a lot of people that avoided assignments in his department, even though he was incredibly successful. The people that worked for him, even though it was a challenge, they loved working for him, and he got performance. And they're looking at him going, you know what? This is the best pick. This person is the best pick because of his leadership ability, his ability to build teams that are cohesive. You know, as the military says, cohesive unit, right? The challenge was his personality. Was a little strong in order to succeed with such a large group of people, right? Because with 10 people, with 5 people versus 25 people, you need some different skills, as you've possibly experienced, right? As you're growing your business. When you go up to several hundred people, as he had on his team in his department, that's a different skill set. Right. So his experience in the military is like a battalion commander now, but he's going to be going battalion. Now, if you're familiar with the military, I may have gotten the number wrong in terms of the unit definition wrong in terms of the number of people. I apologize for that, but he's moving up chain of command. Right. So in this case, to get to 6,500 people, needed to temper the personality a little bit, not really do things different. It was how he went about it. So what did they do? They sent him to assertiveness training. Now imagine that. A successful Marine Corps officer really doesn't need assertiveness training. And this was a question that I asked at the time. It's like, going, you know, what's going on here? Why on earth would you send this guy? I knew him. I'd worked with him and loved working with him, and got the fact that, you know, he did things just so. And if you weren't following the program as he defined it, he'd have you standing tall, right? And I was okay with that. Some people weren't. And I'm looking at it going, why on earth would you take someone that has such a strong personality and send them to assertiveness training? The whole challenge is he's overly assertive. And what I got back is that I had a mentor and senior manager. Because no. He goes, look, here's the thing. Assertiveness training isn't necessarily just for that. In this case, we're sending him to assertiveness training so he can see there's a different way to look at how he can be strong and assertive and dial it back in a sense so that a broader range of personalities, a broader range of people will work for him so that he can be effective at building a 6,500 person team as opposed to a 200-300 person team. It's like, made sense. He got the position, right? And he agreed to the assertiveness training, got the position, succeeded wildly. He was an incredibly effective VP and was able to lead the manufacturing program where it needed to go for the build of that product line. So in this case, it was picking the right training to solve the problem, right? It's like early in my career, my first job out of college was with Hughes Aircraft. And I'm dating myself a little bit. If you're not familiar with Hughes Aircraft, look them up. Legendary, absolutely legendary. Excuse me. Gets me all shook up just thinking about it. Because some of the guys that I and gals that I got to work with had been with the company long enough that they had actually worked with Mr. Hughes. So heady days, learned a lot. Here was one of the things that they taught us. If technology is not the problem, technology is not the solution. So you need to pick the right training to fit the right problem. And many, many times training is used as a lazy attempt to fix something else or as a way to go, well, overtly, and I'll be honest, I've seen this done intentionally. There's a problem. Someone's not a good fit. Instead of addressing that, they're sent to skills training and it's just setting them up to fail. They come back. They can't apply it. They get moved to progressive discipline and they're gone, you know, or it just becomes such a rotten experience for them. Excuse me. That gets me upset too. Tease me off. All right. I'll be honest. That pisses me off when I see stuff like that happen. And don't do that. I'm sure you're not doing that, but it happens. So don't send people to the wrong training. Pick the right training to fix the problem. And if it's an organizational fit problem, address the fit. That's tough. That's always emotionally challenging. It should be, right? We make tough decisions. In building your business, you have to make tough decisions. Don't shy away from them. If you're going to send someone to training, make sure the training is appropriate for the problem you're attempting to solve, what you want them to achieve after the training. And here's the fourth thing, and this is the biggie. I should have flipped these around for you and done a countdown. On this one, this is the thing that defeats training every single time. When training fails, this is always there. It's one of the top two causes of whatever in that specific scenario. This will always be one of the top two causes for the training to have failed. If you want it to fail, do this. And I'm looking down because I'm going to read this. Expect everyone not trained to go along with the trained person doing things differently. Right? You send someone out for training, you send a team or a bunch of people out for training, or you have someone come in and do training. You unleash those people in the workplace. They're going to apply all these great new skills that they learned, and the organization will respond like they are a virus released in somebody's bloodstream, and they will be attacked and eaten alive. It'll be forced out. It'll go nowhere because the organization is going, oh, wait a minute. This is not how we do things here. It's a change. You know, it's a leading change and change management issue. It will fail. The organization will defeat them because your systems, your processes for doing things, your policy and procedure is there to prevent people from doing stuff different. You should have well-defined. Wait a minute. I may be making a big assumption here. You do have clearly defined policy and procedure, well-defined processes that reflect the best practice on how to get something done, right? And you have your best people putting those together so that everybody knows, hey, currently at the time this is written, this is the best way that we know how about to do this. And that policy and procedure also includes a way to determine what's an even better practice and get everything changed, right? Please say yes. Please say yes. Please say yes. If not, we need to talk about that. So let's set that aside. We'll, from this point forward, we'll assume you've got solid processes. They're well-documented. You got policy and procedure at top level that backs that up and reinforces the behaviors that you need in the company and the discipline of running the processes as they're supposed to be, as they're defined. The problem is all of that will conspire to defeat anybody doing something new. You have to make sure that the process changes are guided, they're allowed, that the people that are being affected are brought in, right? So that now becomes a change implementation issue, which, as Ken Blanchard Company's reports, fails 70% of the time. So guess what happens to your training? All you're doing is frustrating your people, and ultimately they'll quit. They become less engaged. The quiet quitting, you know, where they just won't do it, you know, they'll come in and mail it in place. So you're certainly not getting the benefit of your investment in the training. The employee is certainly not getting the benefit of their investment of time and effort in the training in order to become better at what they do to advance their career. That's what's in it for them, right? And your policies and procedures, in some cases, will actively work to defeat them. Like, for example, one of the change initiatives that I was leading at a Fortune 100 company, we were out, won't name any names, but they made commercial aircraft. And we were looking at a process where we could make a relatively simple change, and it would allow us to build, imagine this, we could build a commercial aircraft a week faster. We could deliver it to the customer a week faster. It took an entire week out of the manufacturing schedule. And think about how much it costs to run a factory per day with 2.5 million square feet. You know, at that facility, that campus had 2 million square feet of manufacturing space. So imagine the cost of that on a day-to-day basis, just to keep the lights on, the people employed, payroll, right? So we're reducing, we're not laying anybody off. It's just gave us a chance to reallocate those people doing other things. Well, here's the problem. The way that we're going about the change violated policy and procedure. We couldn't get the change made. Not only could we not get the change made, now we're getting hauled in front of review boards and threatened with firings. Myself, and I was leading a team, I was doing it. So, you know, I stood strong for the team and said, hey, you know, we started sorting it out. The policy and procedure defeated the company's ability to make changes like that that needed to be made. How crazy is that? It sounds ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And it's one of those things where everybody around the table, from, you know, from manufacturing floor to people sitting in the boardroom, are scratching their heads and going, how do we fix this? Because there's, you know, the thousands of, when you get on a scale that large, there's thousands of people involved. We had multiple unions involved and multiple skills. It's like multiple customers affected. So it's like, who has the authority to do what? So the policy and procedures that are in place in order to protect, not just the company, but protect the customer, but ultimately to protect you when you're flying on a commercial aircraft, right? Straight puts a firm straitjacket on everybody's behavior, because when we know something works, we don't want anybody deviating from it. Because when you change something on an aircraft manufacturing line, commercial aircraft, that can have some really serious side effects. So we have to be very, very careful with that. So there's some good reason for it. The problem that it created was, now, okay, how do we work within that context to bring, because we've got new skills, new technology, we were introducing a new technology in that case. We ran into problems with how to implement it, because policy and procedure created barriers and disconnects. Now, say you've got a team of what, maybe 25 people right now, and you're on your way to 250, you've already got stuff like that built into your system, and you need to be on top of that, and it will show up in smaller things now that you can easily fix by making sure that you and your management team are working with people or teams of people that are being trained on guiding them through the process changes, updating processes to have, you know, to make sure that what the way that they're implementing it is actually getting a better result, the result that you wanted in the first place, which is why you invested in the training, right? The policy and procedure at a bigger level, you know, a bigger level that defines how the departments and the processes interact and how things get done. Needs to all be coordinated so that they can implement what they learned and continue to make changes. Otherwise, your organization, your small team will fight them and most likely defeat them. Especially if you've got a team of 200 now, that's where you get a very strong, like antiviral effect. A good way to, best way I can think to put it, it's an immune system effect when people attempt to make changes when they come back from training. So that's four things. You know, you need to make sure you're sending them to training, not education. That's one. You got to have your management team prepared to coach and guide, and you need to have a follow. Second thing is you need to have a follow-up implementation coaching plan, you know, from the training people and also for your management team so that they know how to work differently with the people that have been trained. And I'm making sure I'm getting the right answers here for you. I want to get to a good summary, so I'm looking down here to read it. Three, you're making sure that you've got the right training for the results you want to get and for the problem you're attempting to solve. Don't use technology training for a soft skills issue. And fourth, make sure that you are leading them through making sure that the organization, the people that they work with, understand they're going to be doing things differently and that you expect them to work through it. You participate in working through it and you make sure the process documentation gets updated and policy and procedure, which requires executive decisions on your part or your executive team's part, get made in order to update policy and procedure. Otherwise, don't waste your money on training. Because you miss any of those four and you are going to be at best in the Ken Blanchard Company's reported 70% failure rate for making changes in your organization. So there you go. A lot for a Thursday as this is being broadcast. It's a Thursday. You know, appreciate you being part of Wolf's Watch. If you want more on that, put it in the comments. You got questions, put it in the comments because we keep track of people that are commenting after the live broadcast. When we're broadcasting live, bring questions. We can answer it live and have a conversation, you know, because hey, this is 21st century television. We're live and interactive. So thanks for being part of Wolf's Watch. I'm Wolf, and I will see you on the trail.